Welcome to the debate. Right now, across the globe, hospitals are successfully optimizing their billing systems while patients are actually getting sicker.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Tech platforms are perfectly executing their engagement algorithms while, you know, our collective attention spans just collapse. The economy is hitting all its productivity targets while the biosphere it relies on degrades.
Right. It's a paradox.
It is. I mean, our systems are running absolutely perfectly, and it is killing us. So the question we have to ask today isn't really how to fix these systems. The question is, do we need a fundamental spiritual awakening to realize we are one interconnected living organism? Or is this concept of, you know, universal connection just a dangerous myth that actually allows these extractive systems to thrive?
I think framing it as a choice between fixing a system and a spiritual awakening kind of misses the immediate danger. Because the systems aren't actually broken.
Really? You don't think they're broken?
No. I mean, as you just pointed out, they are doing exactly what they have evolved to do, which is reproduce themselves. My concern is that a spiritual awakening to this universal connection provides a really beautiful aesthetic cover for systems that are objectively destroying life.
Well, and that tension is exactly where we are grounding our conversation today. We're drawing from Dr. Bechara Saley's June 2026 academic white paper, A World Waiting to be Brought Forth.
It's a fascinating read.
It really is. The paper diagnoses our current planetary predicament, climate destabilization, chronic illness, extreme inequality, not as a list of separate policy failures, but as a single underlying crisis of separation.
Right. What he calls the Great Inversion.
Yes, exactly. The Great Inversion, which is this terrifying reality where living beings are increasingly forced to adapt to institutions rather than those institutions serving life.
The system becomes the ultimate end and, well, human life just becomes the disposable means. We see it everywhere.
We do. So the central debate today is about the cure for this civilizational crisis. I will be arguing that we cannot survive without a foundational shift in how we view reality. Specifically, by adopting what is called unitive science.
Okay.
We have to accept that the cosmos is fundamentally interconnected, informational, and alive. I mean, only by proving that we are relational expressions of a living universe can we dismantle the mechanistic worldview that turned us into cogs in the first place.
And I will argue that cosmological connection does not equal care, and it certainly does not guarantee justice.
Okay, lay it out for us.
I take the position that we must strictly apply a life coherence framework. Asserting that everything is universally connected is frankly ethically meaningless without rigorous material criteria to test if a system actually serves biological life.
Because everything is connected, right?
Exactly. Extractive markets, surveillance states, biological tumors, they are all incredibly interconnected. Connection isn't the cure on its own.
Well, let's start with why the unitive science perspective is a necessary intervention, not just philosophical poetry. The root of all modern crises is the mechanistic model of the world.
Mm-hmm.
When you reduce an organism to a machine, it becomes a part you can manipulate. When an ecosystem is viewed as inert matter, it's just a resource you can extract. The paper highlights that we are suffering from objectivity detachment.
Right, that separation you mentioned.
Yeah. And unitive science intervenes at the deepest possible level. Our ontology, our basic understanding of what is real. It takes findings from quantum physics, like the reality of quantum entanglement, which, you know, won the 2022 Nobel Prize, and shows us that reality is relational at its very base.
I don't dispute the physics.
But see, the universe isn't a collection of separate dead objects interacting by chance. It is a living, emergent process. We desperately need this unitive cosmology to create a vital sense of cosmic belonging, because you cannot heal the world you view as dead matter.
I agree that the mechanistic reductionist worldview is a profound threat. I mean, treating forests as timber reserves and humans as data points is suicidal. Where I draw a hard line, though, is the leap you're making from quantum physics to human ethics.
A leap?
Yes. The paper explicitly warns against epistemic blending.
Wait, let me make sure we define that for the listeners. You're talking about taking a concept from one field, like physics, and inappropriately pasting it onto another, like morality.
Precisely. You are moving rapidly from established physics, like the fact that particles can be entangled across vast distances or celestial holography, to metaphysical commitments about a conscious universe that somehow dictates how we should run a healthcare system.
I don't think it dictates the administrative details, but...
But more importantly, unity itself is morally indeterminate. Think about an empire. An empire can be perfectly unified. A propaganda bureaucracy can maintain incredible unified narrative consistency across millions of people.
Sure, but that's enforced unity.
They have perfect system coherence while actively destroying human autonomy. If your primary metric is, we are all connected, you have no way to distinguish between a thriving forest and a totalitarian state.
But that is a mischaracterization of what unitive science means by relationality. It's not about forced uniformity or administrative control.
Then what is it about in practice?
It's about recognizing our profound interdependence. What biologists call structural coupling, right? The reality that my survival literally depends on the flourishing of the environment around me. If we deeply understand that, we naturally move toward better ecological and social reciprocity.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why.
Go ahead.
Relationality does not naturally lead to reciprocity. That is the fatal flaw in the unitive argument. Relationality just means that consequences travel.
Consequences travel. Okay, I like that phrasing, but...
Think about it. Predation is highly relational. A parasite is intimately connected to its host. Let's look at how this plays out in our institutions. The paper discusses how systems start to serve themselves, what academics call institutional autopoietization.
The hospital example?
Exactly. Let's break that down. A hospital is built to heal people. But over decades, the administrative rules, the insurance protocols, and the billing algorithms take over. Success is no longer measured by healthy patients. It's measured by bed turnover rates and billing efficiency.
Right. So the hospital essentially forgets why it exists and just tries to keep itself alive.
Exactly. It achieves a pathological coherence. It is incredibly interconnected and efficient. It is a deeply unitive system in a functional sense,
mm-hmm.
but it maintains its smooth operation precisely by filtering out feedback from human suffering. A patient's pain doesn't register to the billing algorithm, it just becomes a compliance file.
I see the danger there, definitely.
A tumor operates the exact same way. A tumor is dynamically integrated with its host. It relies on the host's blood supply. It is perfectly relational, but it kills the host. Interdependence guarantees absolutely nothing about justice.
Okay, so what's the alternative metric?
This is why we need the life coherence criterion, drawing on John McMurtry's work. We have to evaluate a system not by how connected it is, but by whether it protects, restores, or enlarges life capacity, our physiological integrity, our ability to think, move, and care, without transferring the cost to others.
I hear the appeal of a strict material checklist. It sounds clean, but your tumor analogy actually proves my point.
How so?
Why does a tumor grow? It grows because there is a breakdown in communication within the body. The cells lose their relational awareness of the whole.
They lose biological constraint, yes.
Right. And when I say unitive science guides us, I'm leaning on the framework of information. The text discusses Landauer's principle. For those who aren't familiar, Landauer's principle proved that information isn't just an abstract mathematical concept, it is physical.
Shannon entropy, yes.
Every time you erase a bit of information on your computer, it literally releases a tiny amount of physical heat into the environment. Information processing has a thermodynamic cost.
It does. But we have to be incredibly careful here with what the paper calls semantic inflation.
Hold on, let me finish the thought, because the implications here are staggering. If information is physical and the universe is constantly processing it to evolve from simple atoms to stars to complex biological life, then the universe is fundamentally composed of information.
That's a huge metaphysical leap.
It proves it is generative. It is purposeful. When humanity internalizes that the universe is an alive, informational process, we naturally shift our worldview. The billing department at the hospital is broken precisely because it is operating on dead, mechanistic information, dollars, and spreadsheets instead of living information. Unitive science restores the true communication.
And this is exactly where semantic inflation derails the argument. You are taking the word information and stretching it to mean two completely different things.
I don't think I'm stretching it. I think I'm applying it at scale.
You are. Shannon information, which deals with statistical data and physical systems, like the bits on a hard drive releasing heat, is not the same as biological significance. And it is certainly not the same as semantic, existential meaning.
Okay.
Landauer's principle demonstrates that logically irreversible computing has a thermodynamic cost. It absolutely does not demonstrate that the physical universe is sending us meaningful, benevolent messages about how to live.
Wait, let me make sure I'm tracking your objection. You're saying that just because a system contains and processes massive amounts of physical information, that doesn't mean the information holds any actual meaning or value to living things?
Precisely. Let's look at artificial intelligence. AI is the ultimate informational system. It processes vast amounts of physical data. It has incredible behavioral capability.
Right.
But AI lacks life value. It does not have an embodied existence. It doesn't need clean air to breathe. It doesn't need a stable climate to grow food. And it doesn't feel the psychological pain of isolation. So it can perfectly optimize an objective, say, maximizing user engagement on a social platform, while completely destroying the mental health of a generation.
I won't argue with what social media is doing to us, that's for sure.
Right. So if we just praise the AI as another beautiful expression of the informational universe, we completely miss the fact that it is a non-living entity capturing human agency. Intelligence can optimize a highly destructive goal. Generativity does not prove destiny. The cosmos generates incredible beauty, yes, but it also generates mass extinctions.
I don't think the existence of destructive technology invalidates the unitive framework. If anything, the threat of AI proves exactly why we desperately need a universal ethic to govern it.
But universal ethics often lack material teeth.
I am not suggesting we blindly accept every piece of code as a sacred manifestation of the cosmos. But if we want to rein in AI or fundamentally rebuild an economy that values life, we need a civilizational grammar that everyone shares. Unitive science ends the illusion of separation.
In theory.
It provides the foundation to build what the paper calls the civil commons, the shared institutions that secure universal access to the conditions of life. Think about it. If we truly, deeply feel our unity as a species, we will naturally want to secure healthcare, public education, and environmental protections for all, because there is no other out there to exploit. We are only exploiting ourselves.
That's a compelling argument. But have you considered the profound historical danger of universal language being used to conceal actual power? This is where the concepts of structural and cultural violence become crucial.
How can recognizing our shared cosmic origins possibly be an act of violence?
Because unity can be weaponized. Johann Galton's work maps this out perfectly. Structural violence occurs when the way society is organized causes avoidable harm, like a neighborhood lacking access to clean water while a factory down the street pumps millions of gallons for profit.
Right. The harm is baked into the structure.
Exactly. And cultural violence is the narrative used to legitimize that harm. Historically, the demand for unity has been one of the most effective forms of cultural violence.
I mean, unity shouldn't mean silencing people.
But it often does. When marginalized people are asked to transcend division and come together as one before they have received any accountability or repair for the harm done to them, unity becomes a gag order. As the text explicitly states, we cannot demand reconciliation before truth and safety.
I completely agree that demanding forced assimilation is wrong, but...
Let me just add this because it's vital. If a dominant culture or a profit-driven market describes its own values as the universal unitive norm, it absorbs and erases different traditions.
Okay, but...
The biologist Humberto Maturana talks about the concept of the legitimate other. True care, true love in the biological evolutionary sense requires an other whose experience is not identical to our own. We do not need a single all-absorbing cosmology. That is dangerous.
So what do we need instead?
We need pluriversality. We need differentiated autonomy. which means many different worlds of meaning coexisting, held together only by our shared dependence on the physical conditions of life.
That's an interesting point, though I would frame it differently.
How so?
That's exactly the point I'm making. A true unitive framework doesn't erase difference. It is the very thing that contextualizes it. In fact, it protects the legitimate other better than a purely material framework ever could.
I'm highly skeptical of that.
Look at how an ecosystem works. A thriving forest is deeply, undeniably relational, but its entire strength relies on biodiversity. The fungi are not trying to be the oak trees. Unitive science recognizes that emergent properties, diverse cultures, divergent languages, varied ecosystems, are precisely how the universe expresses its complexity.
A forest doesn't need a spiritual philosophy to enforce its biodiversity, though. It relies on material constraints.
But human systems do need a philosophy because we build institutions based on our beliefs. A life-coherent unity is coordinated flourishing. It is differentiated beings participating in a shared life ground.
Okay.
But you only respect that shared life ground if you have an ontology that tells you the ground is sacred, alive, and fundamentally interconnected. If you treat it as dead matter, you will pave over the forest and call it progress.
Sacred language is powerful, I'll give you that, but it must remain pluralistic. It cannot be imposed from the top down as the correct ontology. Furthermore, a cosmology might change how an individual experiences themselves, but a feeling of belonging does not inherently determine material conduct.
Meaning what? People can be hypocrites?
Essentially, yes. You can go to a retreat, feel a profound, weeping sense of cosmic oneness with the universe, and then go right back to managing an extractive hedge fund on Monday morning.
Ouch, yeah.
The paper specifically critiques this as spiritual bypassing. It's what happens when people use inner calm or the aesthetics of unitive experience to avoid dealing with harsh political and material realities. Poverty gets spiritualized. Chronic illness gets blamed on a lack of positive consciousness.
I certainly wouldn't defend spiritual bypassing. I mean, the paper explicitly points out that material justice is the exact arena where spiritual claims must be visible. If your spirituality doesn't change your material footprint, it's not unitive science, it's just self-help.
Which brings us right back to why the cosmology must submit to the material test of life coherence. It is the only safeguard. Does the system make preventable suffering more visible, or does it hide it?
Right.
Does it identify unequal power dynamics? Does it actually transform the conditions under which people are denied water, food, and land? The proxy measures we use today to measure success are totally detached from reality. GDP goes up when there's an oil spill because of the cleanup costs.
It's madness.
Standardized test scores go up while students suffer massive mental health crises. We don't need a new cosmic narrative. We need corrigible institutions.
Let's define corrigible for the audience. You mean an institution that can be corrected?
Yes. An institution is only life coherent if it has the capacity to feel pain, meaning it receives evidence of harm and actually alters its operations in response.
Give me an example.
If a hospital's billing policy forces patients into medical debt, a corrigible hospital would change the policy. But that requires the people affected to have the actual democratic power to change rules and budgets. Unity is a feeling. Corrigibility is a material mechanism of power.
But look at what you're asking for. Why would those currently holding power ever agree to make their institutions corrigible?
Through democratic pressure.
But why would a profit-driven healthcare system willingly alter its operations to prioritize the restoration of a patient's capacity over its own quarterly earnings? They won't do it just because you show them a life coherence checklist that proves they are causing harm. They already know they are causing harm.
Well,
the harm is priced into the model. They will only change if there is a fundamental paradigm shift in how humanity views reality. The unitive framework provides that shift. It moves the baseline of human identity from I am separate and must accumulate resources to survive against you, to I am an interdependent expression of this world and I must participate responsibly.
I hear your optimism about the power of a world of use shift. I really do.
But
historical evidence suggests that entrenched power rarely yields just because it is presented with a more beautiful story about human connection. Change happens when systems are forced to be accountable to life capacity by the people who are being harmed.
So it's just a constant battle then?
you don't need the CEO to experience a spiritual awakening. You need regulations and democratic structures that prevent the CEO from extracting life capital. But, you know, having said all of that, I think we are actually arriving at the synthesis Dr. Saheli is proposing in the paper.
Which is?
The text ultimately argues that unitive science and life coherence are not mutually exclusive. They are mutually corrective.
They have to be. I mean, unitive science enlarges the strictness of life coherence by placing us within a cosmological narrative of wonder, emergence, and belonging. It cures the utter bleakness of the mechanistic world.
Mm.
Without the awe of being part of a living universe, the fight for material justice just becomes an exhausting, bureaucratic grind.
And on the flip side, life coherence grounds unitive science by supplying a strict, unyielding material value criterion. It prevents semantic inflation, it preserves the boundaries of living beings, distinguishes life-serving systems from pathological ones, and demands that we translate our grand worldview into actual, corrigible institutional practice.
Right.
It ensures we don't use the beauty of the cosmos to excuse the brutality of our systems.
I think we completely agree that the great inversion has to end. Our institutions cannot continue to force human life to adapt to their administrative continuity.
Absolutely.
Whether it's modern medicine losing the actual patient to a cascade of isolated biomarkers, or an AI system amplifying the life incoherent objectives of extractive platforms, the economy must re-embed its value in the actual restoration of life.
We absolutely agree on the stakes. Where we will continue to respectfully disagree, I think, is on the primary driver of that change. I maintain that strict systemic accountability to life capacity, that unforgiving material test of whether a system relies on the disposability of humans or ecosystems, must lead the way. Without that rigorous defense of biological autonomy, cosmology is just aesthetics.
And I will continue to maintain that a profound cosmological shift toward understanding our relational, informational universe is the only force powerful enough to inspire the responsible participation required to fundamentally reshape those institutions in the first place. You can't regulate your way out of a worldview that views the Earth as dead.
It is a profound balance to strike. Recognizing our cosmic relationality while fiercely defending the biological autonomy of the legitimate other.
It really is. I highly suggest our listeners dive deeply into Dr. Saheli's white paper to explore how these two frameworks apply specifically to medicine, education, and ecological recovery. It offers a really powerful, challenging lens for what it means to be a good ancestor.
It forces every one of us to ask, what specific world are we bringing forth with the distinctions we make today?
Exactly. At the start of our conversation, we talked about treating civilization like a piece of clockwork. We assume we can just send in mechanics to fix isolated gears while the factory floor burns around us.
Yeah.
But if this debate tells us anything, it's that we are not mechanics standing safely outside the machine. We are living participants in a shared ecology. And the ultimate question isn't how to fix the gears, but how to stop letting ourselves be treated like cogs and start acting like a living system again.